is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Immigration, the challenge of these last years along the southern border of the United States, are people coming into the U.S. without proper documents. And then the Bush administration, the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration have not provided adequate response. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing about immigration, writing about the challenge of immigration, especially in light of a new book from one of his colleagues at the Hoover Institution, Tim Kaine. The book is entitled The Immigrant Superpower. But before we go to the big think about immigration over many years, we come to a news item. Richard will comment. Richard, a very good evening to you. I read from Reuters. The Biden administration will place hundreds of migrants caught at the U.S.-Mexico border on house arrest in the coming weeks as it seeks cheaper alternatives to immigration detention. A 120-day pilot program will be launched in Houston, Texas, and Baltimore, Maryland, with 100 to 200 single adults enrolled in each location. The so-called home curfew pilot, that's in quotes, will cost $6 to $8 per day for each enrollee, far less than $142 daily cost of immigration detention. The enrollees will generally be required to remain at home from 8 p.m. until 8 a.m., with exceptions for job schedules for those with work authorization or extraordinary circumstances. Reuters then reminds us the Biden administration plans to ask Congress for funding to place as many as 400,000 migrants this year in alternatives to detention. Right now, according to Reuters, about 164,000 are in alternative to detention programs, according to ICE. Your essay identifies why it is that borders are necessary and have been for several hundred thousand years, if not before. How so? Good evening to you.
Well, there are two sorts of questions here. The point is, if you don't have the border, you take people in, then you try to hold them up. You have a huge responsibility for which there are no correlative sources of funding from the people who come. You mentioned the number of $6 to $8 per day. I have no idea of how they reach that number, but I don't think there's any person alive in the United States, given our inflation, who could be kept in adequate quarters and fed and sheltered for that kind of money. The $142 figure strikes me as much more plausible, and it may well be higher here. In addition, of course, they don't mention anything about security. There's nothing there that prevents somebody who's put in one of these detention homes from just walking out and keep on going and sort of merging with the large population being lost. So the basic position that one has is, if you're trying to run a nation, either you can keep people out from the country, then select who you want to come in, but you cannot allow yourself to be dictated by the number of trespassers at the border, because it just overwhelms the facilities that we have. The far better strategy is a strong border situation, and then if you wish to give aid, do it through a series of explicit appropriations, and if possible, try to give aid to people outside the United States in various facilities not located here, so all the flight risk and stuff start to disappear. But the Biden administration is basically making the Trump administration a virtue in the way in which it conducted the border, even though there was very much to be critical of Trump. So I think that this is just pie in the sky. The only solution that will start to work is to keep people out. And essentially, if they're budgeting for 400,000 people, it means they're trying to catch another 250,000 immigrants and leave them in the United States. I think the correct policy, alas and alack, is immediate deportation. And then when you do that, the probability that people will try to get in is going to be reduced. But the moment you take them in, given the options for escape and so forth, you'll easily fill that 400,000, but you won't do it at $6 to $8 per day per person.
Why do we have borders? And you begin with hunter-gatherers, but you get quickly to Rome. And you are an expert in Roman law. So let's begin. Yeah. I'm fascinated. Why did the Romans believe in borders or walls?
Well, what happens is hunter-gatherers are people who just take what the earth gives them, and the only labor that they put in is pulling it off the tree or shooting it down. If you're a hunter-gatherer and you go to a particular territory, you quickly wear out the natural resources in that place, and you take your group and you move on. These groups have to be be large enough to be self-sufficient, but they can't be huge, because if they're huge, they won't be able to stay at any length of time in any particular location. So hunter-gatherers are perfectly stable organizations. They're about 200, 250 persons, given something in that range, and they move together. When agriculture comes, all of a sudden the game is completely different. Now what you have to do is to put heavy investments in the ground today, and you can only harvest them tomorrow. If you don't have property rights in land, which are utterly irrelevant to hunter-gatherers, then the person who plants will not be able to reap the crop, and so they won't plant at all. So what you have to do is to now invest in fixed fortifications. The moment you do that, 150 or 200 people isn't large enough to defend it. So you have to develop a larger conception of what the community is about and get you up to several thousand, maybe even as much as 10,000. And then in order to protect these people, what you have to do is you have to build walls. As I mentioned in that little essay, these were called res sancti. It sounds like they're religious things, but the basic intuition is the wall is a form of common property which cannot be partitioned. And then the moment you start to have walls, you have to manage it. The moment you have to man it, you start to have to build construction and things like that. So all of a sudden, the transformation from a wandering group to a stable group requires the traditional forms of a state. And then if you don't use walls to exclude, everybody can start to come in. And what's going to happen to the local communities, there's going to be a massive wealth transfer from it to everybody else, and the whole thing will pour apart. And so the basic strategy has always been, the beginning of time, you let people in whom you think will help you, and you keep people out who you think either won't help you, they'll be a drag on you, or be your adverse enemy. When you get to the modern states, the borders are bigger, and it turns out the motivations are a little bit more complex, but the basic logic still stays there. If you had open immigrations, you could imagine a situation where the Chinese government decides to send by airplane 100,000 people a day to the United States and say, well, you're all entitled to be here now, and there'd be no way to absorb them. So what happens is, the trick in all of this stuff is to find out ways for you as a nation to invite into your company those people whom you think will contribute most to your society, or to those people you think for humanitarian reasons should be allowed to go back with their own families. And then there's a very thorny refugee problem, which you could get to later. Well, all of this requires to have selective admissions. You have to have the right to exclude. And the mix of people that's going to come into a country when they're invited and those who are going to storm across the borders are very different. Most immigrants who've come to the United States legally and have been established here have been virtuous citizens. You can only say nice things about it. But at the Texas border, it's a war zone. People coming across, being captured, dropping children in the United States to have them repaired and so forth. It's just an intolerable and very difficult system to deal with. So what you have to do is to be firm enough at the border so as to reduce the incentive that people have to try to enter this country illegally. And so the great paradox is, if you say to people, oh, the worst that's going to happen to you is you're going to be put up in government-sponsored housing and being fed 24-7, there are going to be more immigrants coming across the border rather than less. And the problem is only going to get larger. The Biden administration systematically ignores all incentive effects.
Richard, you and I have discussed this over a great deal of time. There's a strong sentiment for immigration in this country. My story is that my maternal grandparents both were migrants at the period in the early 20th century where 15 million people came largely from Europe between 1900 and 1915. My mother's father came in 1900 to educate himself, and then he brought his bride in 1910. And so right in that period are two people making me possible. Therefore, I hesitate when I come to the immigration issue. You're making a case for how it is that we must have borders. That was then, this is now, I understand, but you certainly see the tension when people come up against this issue.
Not only do I see it, but look, John, I'm in exactly the same position. My parents were born in the United States. My grandparents were not. And they all came in immigrants on the boats. The key difference about this is if you can control it through the boats, there are all sorts of mechanisms you could put into place. What happened, for example, there is the people coming across, they had to scrape up a lot of money. It turned out that when they got to the border, they were given various kinds of inspections for health. If it turned out that their health was not satisfactory, they had contagious diseases, and they had to be sent back home, the the shipping company, the boat company, had to take them back at its own expense, which meant that it did some kind of inspection at the ports of disembarkation in order to improve the flow of people, so that you had a system of control. You could have a fairly large number of people coming into our country if you do this. The other thing that happened, I know at least amongst the Jewish community, there was an organization known as HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. And the way this society worked is they would put somebody on the docks to meet every boat and to make sure that the people who came in had private support from these charitable organizations. So it was a completely different system. And it was amazing about how effective it started to work. And, you know, what I like to say about that is the City College class of 1928, that was the year my father graduated from that school, you know, is one of the ablest classes in the United States. It was probably the strongest academic institution in the United States. It was populated with immigrant kids. So I'm not against immigration. And if you go look at Tim Kaine's book, which is extremely thoughtful on that, he says, look, we became a superpower because we welcomed immigrants into this country and treated them well. But the consequence of that is what he says, and I think it's correct, is you have to stop illegal immigration and to expand legal immigration. So let me give you a couple of things that are really terrible on the legal side. The United States has systematic rules which say you don't want to take people into this country if they're going to compete for jobs with domestic, with American citizens. So this sort of anti-competitive rationale is just terrible, and it sends all sorts of people back overseas who would be a tremendous asset to this particular country. And then it also, we're very bad on using part-time admissions program. Let somebody in for 3 years, they don't become citizens, and you go back home. So there are all sorts of things that you could start to do to improve this overall mix. But what you cannot do is to let the size and the nature of the problem be dictated by a series of illegal actions by other individuals coming across the border, for which it's impossible to respond in a responsible way. It is perfectly fine, as far as I'm concerned, for the United States in these modern days to say, look, we really want to make a substantial commitment to betterment of people throughout the world. And then you could either invite certain immigrants in through various kinds of inspections and application procedures, or you could develop outposts overseas in which you could fund with American dollars efforts to try to make people, particularly young children and vulnerable people, better with food and aid. But what you cannot do, again, is treat the entire problem as an open border problem, because what happens is if you select people, you'll select people whom you want. If you allow people to select this country, many people who will come in whom you do not want. Now, it's ironic. If you look at any study of immigrant behavior and criminal actions in the United States, you see critics. Immigrants are perfectly virtuous citizens. But the people coming in illegally across the border are not established people. They're not DACA people or anything of the sort. So it's really difficult to get a kind of a sensible solution that allows you to control borders and then to be generous in the way in which you open them up selectively. Immigration is a nightmare. And one other thing that we should do, I'll just mention it very briefly, is the more free trade that you have with other countries, the less reason people have to come to the United States. So whenever you start seeing all of these sort of vigorous, sort of anti-foreign trade situations, we don't want to export jobs to Mexico and so forth, one of the things you're doing is making the immigration problem worse.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently Defining Ideas about Immigration, and a new book, The Immigrant Superpower, by his colleague Timothy Kaine at the Hoover Institution. We're going to turn now to an issue that is part of the immigration debate, and it's unresolved to my understanding, the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a.k.a. Dreamers. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.